But something great these days is that even if you live in the countryside, let's say here in China, you are still so closely connected to everything. Like you get packages delivered right into the village. Yeah. And you're not far from the nearby county. And you won't be too far from the nearby city where you can go hop on a fast train and go wherever you want.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, 20 years ago where you would have to go somewhere to mail stuff and receive stuff or your shops are only stock the cheapest, commodities.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can get anything you want. Mm. And if you are someone who is inside all the time, you know, on your computer or doing work, it probably won't make much of a difference where exactly you live because you can get whatever you need.
Welcome to The Bridge. Fun conversations on culture, life, and everything in between.
Find us where you get your podcasts. If you like the show, then consider pushing the like button or giving us 5 stars. Suggestions, comments, anything you would like to share, email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. We love The Bridge.
First, I'm curious, what was $2 like? Like $2 a week, like back when you were like 10 years old. Could you get a lot of things?
Oh, yeah. $2 was like enough for like a couple of baseball cards. You know, they sell these little slivers of about 10 or 50 baseball cards. I don't remember how many it is in a pack with a little piece of gum. And you could get an ice cream cone and maybe still have some for gum, that kind of stuff. You know, little things.
When did you start getting allowance?
I don't actually remember the age, but it was something my parents thought was really important because they wanted to teach us to do our chores. And they're like, these are your daily chores. You have to, you know, unload the dishwasher. Or my older brother's, at first it was like mowing the lawn. A certain amount of things you had to do each day during the week. And if you did all those things, you got your allowance. So it's kind of like having a job for a kid, you know?
But like, I've always wondered about that because I don't really do that in like my household. And my husband and I were kind of against that idea because we feel like that would create a sense of, you know, you versus us, you know, like the kid versus the parents. Yeah. But for us, at least in our like culture, it's supposed to be a unity. Mm-hmm. You know, there shouldn't be anything dividing us as a unity. Mm-hmm. So by, you know, telling her that if you do this, we'll give you 50 cents. And then she will have the idea that, oh, wow, you know, this is like a job opportunity. It's like me against them. So we didn't want to get started on that.
There's different kinds of work culture. So I think that's a very fascinating observation. So it brings us into a whole other topic because there are different kinds of work cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, some companies you work for, you go and you're like really happy to be there and your friends with your boss and stuff like that.
Rare.
And so it doesn't have to be an us versus them thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've definitely had jobs where it was like, I hate being here. And, you know, I'm just here for the paycheck. Yeah.
Your boss knows that exactly. Yeah, that's pretty common, I suppose. So are we talking about allowances today or just like, you know, kids?
Well, I mean, my idea is I'm concerned about the economic situation of American young people. I'm talking about, you know, Gen Z, people in their 20s, if they can't even survive on a full-time job, their situation is so dire that with a full-time 40-hour work week, or maybe even a side hustle on top of that, they still can't pay their bills and they need to go to mom and dad to make up the difference. This is very concerning. Like, what kind of economy are we building in the U.S. for the middle class if people can't just get a job and make it?
Well, I'm guessing that the biggest problem is they're paying for rent. Because otherwise, if you can't even make enough for like food and basic clothing, that's a serious problem.
Yeah.
But most people, I think their problem is they pay thousands, like here in China, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you share an apartment with someone else, you probably have to pay, let's say in Beijing, over 2,000 for a shared apartment. That's like, what, $300, right? So not too crazy by American standards, but
yeah, young that's actually insane. If you could get a place like that in America, people would be like killing each other to get into that place.
They would be going to like restaurants every night. So I think for someone who can't really make it on their own, the problem is mostly because of rent, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I see that perspective. But if you look at a lot of other things, I'm on Instagram a lot lately. And so I watch these videos of people talking about the cost of going to McDonald's. And there was a gentleman I was watching yesterday say that in some states in the United States, just a Big Mac, not the meal, just a single Big Mac in some states can cost 8 $18.
$18? So, wait.
$18.
That's crazy. Yes.
I know. That is crazy. So if you think about it, okay, yeah, sure. You absolutely are right, baby. You need a place to stay. Mm-hmm. So rent, unless you want to be homeless, that's the first bill you pay, right?
Right.
But like, if you want to eat, eating is expensive. I mean, and I've heard videos, you go to the grocery store to buy vegetables and stuff and cook for yourself. It's almost just as expensive as going out because the food prices at the grocery store aren't much lower, you know. And, you know, in China, if you're like, oh, I can't go to Walmart, you know, the grocery store, I'm going to go to like the, you know, the farmer's market, right? Wet market kind of style places.
Right.
It's a lot cheaper. But in the U.S., if you go to a farmer's market, it's actually more expensive, not less expensive.
Right. You know, there's a huge difference between shopping in supermarkets. Like people like I would shop in supermarkets, but I think a lot of people, like say people living in the countryside or in counties, most families probably shop in these like markets on the side of streets.
Yeah.
And they've been there for decades, probably as long as people can remember. And there's like a designated spot where people go buy their daily vegetables. And that's another difference. Like younger people or, you know, people who are really busy with their jobs, they shop maybe once a week or so, like how you guys do it in the States, right? For most families.
Well, once or twice, yeah. But whole tons of food. You bring, like, you know, the whole store home. You survive. Yeah.
Like, everything like plastic wrapped. But then for a lot of other families, like with older people especially, they go to these vegetable market. We call them Caichang, vegetable market, every single day. Some people even go like twice a day to get the freshest produce. And they are so much cheaper and they're not like all wrapped up. They're, you know, the farmers actually, they would drive from the countryside, like all the way to the counties, not too far away from their farms and start selling there. That's actually the best way to shop. And because I live on like the edge of Beijing, so there is actually a market not like walking distance from where I live, like 2 days, 2 or 3 days per week. Like a lot of these vendors will come over and they would either have like a little truck like thingy. There would be just like piles of tomatoes from one farmer and like piles of onions or apples from another and freshly made tofu. And so it's almost like a festive day, you know, not just a day or a place people to go get their food, but like where they would just go for fun. So, but that's because I live so far from the city center. But I actually consider it a bonus. You get really fresh stuff much cheaper.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I when I was living in Wuhan, I was on the south of the Third Ring. So it's kind of the edge of Wuhan. And there was a lot of markets like that. They weren't always outside where people were showing up, but sometimes they actually had like inside places too, where there were like all the, you know, the farmers would just come in and line up their stock for the day, and they would be just selling one or two things. It was just like, that's the peach guy, this is the tomato guy.
Exactly.
Right. And you would just go buy whatever you needed, and it was fresh and it was from their farm that morning, and it was it was amazing and very, very affordable. If you go to the grocery store, the same thing would cost twice as much.
See, so it sounds like the perfect solution, right?
Yeah. The farmer, you were cut off the middleman, literally.
Exactly. Yeah. And everything is so much fresher. But I guess people living in cities, city center especially, might not have that opportunity.
Well, I think in America's case, even if you live, I lived in Oakdale, California for quite a while with my mom. And we're in the countryside. We're where the almonds are grown. We're where there are like thousands of cows in every direction. And it's still insanely expensive. Like it wasn't cheaper because our location.
Why?
The logistics of it did not reduce the cost of it. If you go to the farm in America, oftentimes they'll have like their exhibition center place and they'll sell it as like fresh from the farm. And so they actually charge as just as much or even more.
Okay.
Because you get the experience of going to the farm to get it.
Oh, it's like apple picking at the orchard.
Well, there's that too. But I mean, you just buy it right there. And they're like, oh, but this is farm fresh. We charge more than the grocery store. The grocery store is like, you know, 2 or 3 days old that you're getting it very fresh. That's why it's so much.
Well, they're so business everyone, savvy.
Exactly. In America, everyone is market oriented and marketing oriented. So wherever you go, they have their own reasons why it should be more. So like you don't get a discount for going to the countryside.
That's too bad. Like, but anyhow, so I was thinking since we started with, you know, giving kids allowance, I was asking you about your allowance because my daughter is 9. And like she has classmates who do get an allowance every week from their parents. And we haven't really talked about this. And one thing about today's China is that there's so few places where you can spend money.
Yeah.
Like cash. So everything is done on the cell phone and mm-hmm. kids don't have cell phones. So like they don't get to buy anything. And I actually think it's kind of missing out because you remember the days, right? When you had like a dollar in your pocket and you felt like the richest kid in the world and you go to the like tiny store in your town or, you know, on the block to get something that you absolutely love, like a bubble gum or like a pencil,
yeah.
you know, things like that. And that's a great experience, you know, but now like my daughter she's having a hard time spending money because there's like no such places to go. And if it's, but I guess mm-hmm. things work out differently in the city center where there are a lot more shops, but then people usually pay on their cell phones mm-hmm. and they rarely use cash anymore. But so for the past 2 weeks, we spent the Chinese New Year holiday back in my daughter's grandparents, like her mm-hmm. on her dad's side, and mainly in like a county level place. And I was so happy to find that they still have little shops, like dollar shops back in the States. Mm-hmm. So, like everything in there would be like 2 to 5 RMB. Mm-hmm. So what, like 30, 50, 80 cents kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they still accepted cash. Like it's still common for people to use cash at like the county level, at least the place that we went to. Mm-hmm. And my daughter was so thrilled because she became like a Wan Yuan Hu. Do you know what that means?
I have no idea.
It's like a person with over 10,000 RMB.
Oh, yeah.
And so back in the 80s, like if you were a Wan Yuan Hu, like you had over 10,000 RMB,
yeah.
you were one of a kind. You were the wealthy ones.
Wow.
Because back then people were making like less than 100 RMB per month.
Mm.
So that's a lot of money. And you know how kids receive red packages?
Yes.
Right? Red envelopes, mm-hmm. like stuffed with cash. Mm-hmm. She had loads of those, like from relatives, from her grandparents, and just everywhere she went, like because we would go relative visiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like adults would like catch children and give them, you know, these red envelopes. some maybe a few hundred and some like thousands and even more than that. So she's like loaded mm-hmm. with cash. And I bought her a little wallet. So every day she would, you know, take her little wallet and she would go to these like dollar shops and just have a splash, you know, buy like 50 cents diamond rings and like erasers and pencils. And it turned out to be such a great experience.
Mm.
So, I mean, I guess it makes sense for them to have a little bit of a allowance, but then she's already so like wealthy now. I think this will last more than a year, but of course, you know,
let's tell her, why didn't I get an allowance? It's because you were so wealthy from Chinese New Year.
Exactly. You have more than I can give you now. She's yeah. like wealthier than I am. But of course, eventually those money will go to the bank, you know, as an account.
Well, I saw a great on the, you know, mentioned parents or adults chasing children down
yeah.
to give them red envelopes. I saw a really funny Douyin video, which is the opposite. Huh. There was an old man, I don't know, he's 50, 60 years old, not that old.
Mm.
And he's sitting there like doing whatever in his hutong, like courtyard.
Right.
And a bunch of children come around the corner because they're coming home for Chinese New Year.
Mm.
He runs to try to escape and they capture him. Then they all bow to him and he's forced to pass out red envelopes to all of them.
Wow. Was this in Beijing, you were saying? Or
I'm not actually sure.
That's
where
funny.
It was. Yeah.
Well, usually it's within like your family clan.
Mm.
It's also common that, let's say, if you go back to your native village, you sort of know every family in the village.
Mm.
And all the kids are like within the family, within the village. So you will hand out.
It's like trick or treat.
Yeah, but then
go door to door.
You wouldn't hand out cash. A lot for each kid. Maybe like just, you know, 10 or 20 kwai. Just, you know, yeah. some cash for little kids. And it's fun and they're thrilled because it's a lot of money for them. Yeah, so I think it's a great tradition. So this is one way that Chinese kids are spending money. Maybe not like every month or maybe not for doing like house chores.
Well, you know, all of this sounds fun and good. And I hope you make the right decision for you and your family. Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge.
Getting back to the seriousness of an adult needing support from their parents in, you know, a developed society, this is an article from FoxNews.com. It says almost 60% of parents still giving their adult kids money, while majority of adult kids live at home survey. So I'm just so shocked by this. Firstly, there's two separate things going on here. The majority of Gen Z kids are living at mom and dad's house, so they can't even afford rent. And then the second thing going on here is 60%, more than half of all parents are giving their kids money. Now, I'm 45 years old. And when I go home from China to America to my mom's house, she always tries to offer me like $100. She's like, hey, Jason, here's $100. Why don't you go spend it? And I'm like,
oh,
you have no idea how much money I have. Like, thanks. You keep that, mom.
No, but it's so much fun. And, you know, to just take it and say, you know, to be like a child again. I would take it next time.
Well, you know, I think there's something different, though, going on. I think it's more than $100, like once every couple of years going on here. We're looking at this problem where it says among those ages 18 to 24, this is according to the Pew Research study, 57% are living in a parent's home compared to 53% in 1993. So it's not that big of a difference, but it is some, you know, that's actually a few million people. You know, that's quite a lot of people living in the mom and dad's home. Now, you've mentioned before that in China, it's a good thing to live with your parents for a long time. So maybe this isn't that bad. Maybe America's just becoming more like China. What do you think?
Well, first of all, you said among those aged 18 to 24.
Yeah.
I mean, they are adults, but they're still pretty young. Mm. Like, they are far from making it on their own yet for most of them. Mm. Like 24, you just graduated from college and you probably have a small salary, but then you have to pay rent, mm-hmm. right? If you live on your own. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't think this age group, we should be too harsh on them. Mm. They take time to make the transition. But see, while I was thinking about this, I think one major difference with Chinese parents is they are more concerned about whether or not you are married by a certain age.
What's that age?
Rather than whether or not you're living with them. I think that age, like if you're 30 and you don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend, parents will start asking. I mean, that's normal, right? Anywhere you are, right?
So you could live at home until you're 30. That's cool. But if you're not dating someone, mom and dad are like, well, you need to get out there.
No,
go to the clubs.
They'll never know that you need to get out there. They'll never really say you're going to get out of there. It's just not a Chinese thing to kick kids out of, you know, home.
Man, I want to be reborn in China. I just stay at home forever.
You would have a very fat, like, cushion. Like, you would not worry about having nowhere to go, or like, you know, and you're like taken care of, you know, if you're so. But anyway, so back to the topic, they're more concerned about whether or not you are going to get married or not. Mm. Like, by the time you're 40, if you're still single, I think parents will feel a little bit of edgy, is that the word?
Like, sure,
they'll panic a little bit. It's not about kicking the kid out of the nest. Most of them don't mind having their kids in their nest, and they probably love it. Mm-hmm. So, and usually by the time they're married, it's like the daughter will usually be either living with her husband on their own, or they will live in the husband's parents' place.
And that's okay. Wow.
That's the norm. Like, back traditionally, back in the countryside, like say two or three generations back, that's how Chinese households are run. That's why people wanted sons.
Wow.
Because it's the wife that comes into.
So they could get a whole other family living in their home. See, in America, that would be my generation when I was 25 or so, 20. Well, my parents kicked me out when I was 18. They're like, get out there, turn you into a man. It's time to man up. And they were like, get out. They were literally like, here's the date. You're out.
My.
Go. Here. They bought me a bicycle. They're like, here's a bicycle, you know, to get to work or whatever. I didn't have a car at the time. Uh-huh. They're like, get out. And I was like, okay, I'll move in with my friend and his lip, whatever. But,
really?
At that time, if you would like get married and bring your family to live with your parents, the shame in America at that time would have been so insanely high. It's like, oh, you're married. That's great. Where do you live? With your mom? What? I mean, that is like, wow.
Okay.
But I think things are changing because out of necessity,
right?
Maybe what you're describing is starting to happen. But, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that would have been unthinkable in American culture.
Well, traditionally, as I mentioned, you've heard of like three generation households even, and people pride themselves if they have like four generation, even five generation households. Like, that means your life, you're like on the top, you know? That's like people's definition of success in traditional Chinese culture.
Wow.
First of all, you have a large family and everyone's together and you have like grandchildren. wow. So, but nowadays, of course, that's less common. But the tradition is for the son, at least the eldest son, to remain in the family. let's say we're in, still in the countryside, right?
Yeah.
And then their kids can, you know, they just reproduce.
Wow.
But then nowadays, because I went back to my grandma's hometown, like home village. And the situation here is they don't live in the same household. Like if you have kids, they're going to get their own plot of land yeah. to build their own home, even if they don't live there. So, but it's usually close to their parents. Like my uncle, he's like 80 and his son lives about 2 minutes away, like walking distance. Mm-hmm. So he has his own household, but he can come over every single day, like anytime on a call, he'll be over and his wife will be over to help with household things, you know, house chores and stuff like that. So everyone is still kind of more closely connected. But then the younger generation, they might move to the county or the city, you know, go a little further away. So yeah, it's normal for kids to stay with their parents. And even after they get married, there's really no kicking out process. But if you are the daughter and you're married, then it's uncommon for the daughter and the husband to stay in the parents' household. Yeah, I think that would be a little weird.
You know, the more you're saying this, I think in order for millennials and Gen Z people in America to normalize the new lifestyle that's being adopted there, maybe they just need to be like, well, we're trying to adopt Chinese culture.
Oh, wow. But I think, to be honest, since I'm middle-aged myself, I'm not like, you know, I'm doing okay, but still with paying for mortgage and maintaining cars and supporting our child's education, it's not easy. Mm. Like, I think we're probably more pressed for money than when I was single.
Wow.
Because there are just more needs, right? You want to give your child the best education and you want her to, you don't want to take her on trips to travel, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I actually think the middle part of, you know, most people's lives when they are, you know, bringing up their children, it's actually the hardest part, probably the hardest part financially, at least financially.
You know, a lot of my other Chinese friends, including the producer of the show, feel the same way and have mentioned the same thing. They're like, oh no, China's great. This is great. Don't worry about that part of the economy. But raising kids in China seems to keep coming up again and again is this very burdensome and challenging thing to do here.
Oh yeah. I don't even know where to start and where to end when it comes to this topic. But of course, the needs are very elastic, right? Like my cousin back in the in the countryside, he has three kids. He makes about like less than 4,000 RMB a month. That's what? A little over $400. And his wife makes a little bit more, maybe $500 per month. And that's
$700.
Yeah, that's their like entire, that's their entire income on a monthly basis. And they have three kids and they still, they're still making it. They feel like they live a decent life. They have a house in the county. They bought a house there and they have a house in the countryside.
Yeah.
And their eldest daughter is in college and soon she will be making money on her own. So, I mean, they live and us on the other side, we make like a few times more, but we're spending like a few times more. Do we have to pay thousands for, you know, the summer camp? Well, you know, if we can, I think it's a good opportunity for her, but we don't have to, you know what I mean? Like the more you make, the more you spend. And so that's kind of,
so all of this is try to get to, you know, kind of a point is to ensure that your daughter is able to go to a very high quality college, right?
Not really. I just, she doesn't have to go to college even, you know, if in the future she's into like arts and stuff, maybe she can make it in other areas on her own. But just to give her, you know, a good experience, do what we can as responsible parents.
Wow.
But if we can't afford it, then we won't do it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying that expense wise, it's very elastic. But you could also do with a few thousand RMB per month. But the point I'm saying is in today's society, there's so much out there, like so many opportunities. You can't really, you can never really have enough unless you feel like you already have enough. So there's always more money that can be put in the family. And that's why I think middle-aged families in my generation, sometimes, you know, if they get a little help from their parents, it's not, I don't consider it weird, because from the parents' perspective, let's say my mom, sometimes like for my birthdays, for my daughter's birthdays and for major holidays, she would just give us like fat, like really fat red envelopes, like stuffed
with
cash.
As an adult?
As an adult, yeah. And like,
wow.
Just like tens of thousands. She'll just...
If she wants to adopt another kid, you know, I'm available.
Well, I will tell her that. But for her, she's also happy because for her, she's, you know, she's contributing to her daughter's quality of life and also her granddaughter's quality of education.
Right. Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
She feels like she's not like, I didn't ask for it. Right. She's happy that she can make that contribution. And I'm happy. Right. Because it does make things easier. And like my mom, she's been frugal for like ever. Like if you
so
want
that
tips,
she can finally give you all this money.
Yeah. And I mean, she doesn't even spend it on her own. Like if people want tips as to how to spend money, my mom can write like a handbook, like 500 pages on how to save money. So yeah, there's no shame to be, you know, in the whole process. Everyone is pretty happy. So I don't think people should feel too shameful. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. You're listening to The Bridge.
Let's reverse this. Let's tip it on its head. Because how many families do you know in China where the kids, whether they be your age or, you know, in their 20s, contribute financially to their parents' livelihood?
It depends on the needs. Like, let's say if my parents are not financially independent and they need my help, you know, I will be there. No conditions. Right. I'll give whatever I can offer them and other physical help. But if they are like well provided, they have enough savings, there's really no need. But then on occasions, like on major holidays, it's most of the cases, it's the elderly, grandparents and aunts and uncles giving the younger child. As long as you're not married, you know, they will give you red envelopes stuffed with cash. Once you're married, you're considered a like single unity, and then you're no longer receiving them. So anyhow, but at times, the younger generation, let's say my husband, sometimes he would give red envelopes back to her parents as not really as financial help, but as an offering of, you know, I care about you. And no one really need it, right? Needs it.
So everyone's just passing money around symbolically.
Yeah, everyone's just passing money around symbolically, exactly, as a show of care and love. But then if in cases like the parents, they need money for like they're getting a new house or maybe their health problems, then the kids will definitely take out their savings to help them. Yeah.
Well, in the US, it would be very unusual unless you are a millionaire to provide for your parents. And the reason is they're booming, you know, the boomer generation tend to be very well off. They tend to own their own home. They tend to have like a car or two. They tend to have a fully furnished lifestyle. A lot of them are already on Medicare and, you know, retirement payment, and they don't really need generally the general rule. So the concern is for Americans that in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, you could have a one income family, which owned its own house, has two cars, three kids, white picket fence, the whole works with the dog. And you'd be like, yeah, I have enough money to go on vacation a couple times a year. Now you could have, you know, you could be working your full-time job. You could be two income couple with no kids and you could barely pay your bills at all. So for a lot of people, you know, recently there was a statistic that came out where the 60% of Americans, which roughly represent the U.S. middle class, now have less wealth in total than 1% of America. And this just happened very recently. So Americans are increasingly anxious and frustrated because, you know, and that's why, you know, the older generation is giving allowance to the younger kids because the younger generation can no longer, unless they have an exceptional job, right? You know, they're a doctor or a nurse at or something. They have a very special kind of job and they thought way ahead of time about what job is going to be paying. That very small class of people represents, you know, a sliver, a minority of Americans. Most Americana is at the point where they're like, I can't survive. Mom, can you please help?
Wow.
It's not that it's a bad thing that people need to move back in their parents, but this transition to a different kind of culture, a different kind of lifestyle is unusual for American society, given, you know, the last century. So a lot of people are having a hard time culturally accepting the fact that now they need to be more reliant on their family. So
it's more like a psychological thing for a lot of Americans to get used to.
Yeah, maybe cultural kind of psychology.
I want to share something about how I see similar things here happening in China, but maybe for slightly different reasons.
Sure.
So one funny thing about Chinese, like the cross generations, like my parents' family, my parents' generation, for example, like my aunt, right? My oldest aunt from my mom's side, she doesn't really have much of a salary because she lives in the countryside, but she's so used to this way of lifestyle, like not having a lot of cash to spend. She just doesn't spend a lot of money, right? They sell farm and she has enough food and daily necessities. So she's frugal in a way, like in our eyes, she just feels like she lives a normal life. But in our eyes, you know, she's poor and she doesn't have enough. But then the younger generation, even though they have a pretty stable income, they have everything they need, like a house and everything, they still feel like they don't have enough because they need more. They simply need more. Mm. There's so much out there. And then comes the third generation. That's even worse, right? The third generation, they make probably twice as much as their parents do, but they never, never have enough. Like they feel like they're so poor because there's so much out there that they can't buy. So they don't really measure things by how much do I need? Do I have enough of what I need? That's how like my parents' generation measure their wealth. They have everything they need. They don't even like need extra money. But the younger generation can never have enough, especially like the grandchild, like maybe in their 20s or even teens. They probably are making more cash than their parents. But then they go out and they see what? Bubble tea, right? Their parents drink free water. Literally, you don't pay for drinking water. And then they go off. They have to have bubble tea.
Yeah.
Or they have to, like me, I have to have coffee. And it's even more expensive. And then they have to have a car, right? The older generation, they walk. You know what I mean? And then the younger ones, they have to get stylish dresses or they feel inferior. So it's the whole culture. It's the environment.
It looks like American consumerism is coming to China in a big way. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, of course. I think, yeah. And then my generation, I'm at the point where I'm getting sick of this already, right? I know I have enough. I have more than enough like material goods. And I don't even want to buy things. And I even feel angered when people give me a lot of stuff because I don't need them, you know, they're just piling up as garbage in my house. Stop giving me stuff. So maybe some people have, you know, be pushed to a certain extent to turn back a little and see things more reasonably. Do I really need so much? But that's just some, you know, how do you define being wealthy, being rich? How do you define having enough, right? The younger kids can never have enough.
Can I add to this? Because Summer and I, my wife and I, were talking about this recently, and we were looking at our apartment and comparing it to other people that we know in China who made different choices. Summer and I, we found a very affordable apartment. You know, it's a little smallish than, you know, most apartments in China. Not super small. It's actually kind of roomy for us. And we bought it and decked it out. And now, but it completely belongs to us. Now, we know people who live like, you know, a 10-minute walk from us, whose apartment is twice the size. But we talk to them and they're going to be paying a mortgage for the next 20 years. We feel like we made the right decision because we have economic freedom now to do anything we want and not worry about the consequences because we don't have to worry we're going to miss a mortgage payment.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge.
As I mentioned, I went back to the countryside, and in Chinese countryside, like the every family member, like if you have three kids, each of your kid will receive a plot of land on which you can build your own houses. And it doesn't cost all that much to build houses in the countryside. So even if you don't have a job, like let's say you're 25 and you didn't find a job, you still have a plot of land and you still have a house to live. Usually your parents will build it for you. But then if you make it on your own, you can build your own house, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a place to stay. And then, you know, you can find work in the county, in the city, and then, you know, have some cash. So that's countryside life mm-hmm. style. But then let's say you graduate from college, you decided to work in the city, then you have to start from scratch. You have to find a job and you start saving for a down payment if you want a house. And then you get a house and you have a mortgage for like 20 to 30 years, something like that. Hmm. And then you have to buy a car and you have kids. And then, you know, even endless need of fresh cash expenditure. Hmm. So who is living the better life here? Hmm. I mean, people make different choices. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, as someone living in the countryside, they actually have all their basic needs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They have a house and they have enough to eat. No one really worries about not having enough to eat. Everybody's eating too much these days, even in the countryside.
I know. I think that's too extreme for me. We have that option. Summer's grandmother lives in the deep countryside in Shandong. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, Jason, why don't we just buy this and let her live here forever? And then it'll be ours and we could move here. And I was like, mm-hmm. and they were like, oh, it's like going to be 20,000 RMB, which is like $3,000. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to live here.
I don't want a farm.
Yeah, I don't want to live on a farm in the middle of the countryside. I'm sorry. I need to go to the movies and the mall every now and then.
Well, yeah,
I think it's a balance between, you know, exactly. having enough. And yeah, you need to know when enough is enough and not buy every single thing on your wish list.
But something great these days is that even if you live in the countryside, let's say here in China, you are still so closely connected to everything. Like you get packages delivered. Right into the village and you're not far from the nearby county and you won't be too far from the nearby city where you can go hop on a fast train and go wherever you want.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, 20 years ago where you would have to go somewhere to mail stuff and receive stuff or your shops are only stock the cheapest, you know, commodities.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can get anything you want. Mm. And if you are someone who is inside all the time, you know, on your computer or doing work, it probably won't make much of a difference where exactly you live because it's you can get whatever you need.
Those are all great points. I want to talk about something else because in the American context, owning your own home separate from the rest of your family, you know, your parents' family is a huge, huge, huge deal. It's ingrained in what it means to be an American very deeply. And it might take a long time to get over that. Mm. So this is an article from Julian Mark. It's from the Washington Post. Millennials have found a way to buy houses living with mom and dad. And so actually, this makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, why not? If you can't afford to buy a home and you're currently renting, American listeners, just move back in with mom and dad for 5 years. And you during that time, you can save, you can give your parents something, but also make it an arrangement where you promise to save a certain amount of money each month. And when you finally get to a down payment on a house, then you can stop renting. You'll be able to walk out of your parents' house and own a home just like mom and dad and make your mortgage payment for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
But at the end of that 20 years, it's going to be yours.
I think this is a great idea. Like this is extremely practical. And of course, that's if you are on decent terms with your parents.
Yeah, of course.
Or else the psychological suffering might not be worth it. So yeah, be on good terms with your parents in case that, you know, you're going to have to save money for a down payment. But this really, really, really works. Mm. It's not just about saving rent, because if you live home, usually you tend to eat at home most of the time. And the money that people spend on meals, it's less noticeable, not like a chunk of rent of, you know, a huge portion of your income every month. And you feel like you're bleeding, you know, when you are writing that check. But the smaller payments like for food, for laundry, and just other things that you tend to buy mindlessly when you're living on your own, these spending will all be cut like dramatically if you live with your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the amount of savings that can just stack up will be shocking to even to yourself. you wouldn't realize.
I've read an interesting article that says for parents whose kids want to stay with them for several years after they turn 18, because this is a big American thing, you know, for them, you just start charging them rent, low rent. So, you know, consider your town. So average rent for a one bedroom or two bedroom house or something is going to be like $1,000. Okay. Charge your kid $500 a month to stay there, but don't, you know, use it. Put it in a savings account. After 5 years, give it to your son or daughter and say, here's the down payment for your house.
That's something very sensible to do. I do recommend it. And I just, in China, this will be very normal. Like neighbors, your family members, no one will say a thing. It's just your kids live at home. When they're still working, that's like no one's going to ask anything. But maybe it's something new in the States and people just need to get used to that because it makes sense. And also just be a decent, like a responsible family member, like be a responsible team player. If you live at home, pick up your own garbage, right? And help your parents out. Just like if you have a roommate in college, don't be annoying. Don't be like a rat or a pig, you know? So, and then I think things will work out perfectly. What's a greater way of saving money? I can't even think of it. Investments. Maybe it's going to work out, maybe not. Yeah. And I think parents will appreciate it too, if you're just being a responsible member.
So this is
great idea.
I agree. I think it's a fantastic, there are all kinds of ways to tackle these, especially like if baby, you know, what baby said is correct, that you're on good terms with your parents. If living with your parents is creating like incredible strife, then maybe roommates is the way to go. This is from the Pew Research study that we started out with. And this is the section 2, financial help and independence and young adulthood. And it says here, and I find this, there's a lot to unpack, and it's just one or two sentences. 44% of young adults say they receive, and that's between 18 and 24 again, say they received financial help from their parents in the past year. Sentence 2, the top two areas in which they got help were household expenses and their cell phone bill or subscription to streaming services. I think firstly, it doesn't sound like Americans are actually doing that bad. If you're 18 to 24 and you're the help that you want from mom is for your Netflix account. So it's probably not as bad as it sounds.
Well, just so you know, I think 24 is still considered like a kid here in China. Like if the kid is only 24 in a Chinese family, they're still like a baby. So like they're barely considered mature adults.
Sure.
I think maybe the cutting point is when you get married. Like if you already started your own household, then naturally they will feel like you should be more responsible for your, you know, everything about your own life. So it's not so much of an age thing. Well, up to a point, right? If you're 40 and still living at home and spending your parents' money, well, you know, there is a term for that. In Chinese called 啃老族, which means you're like gnawing on your parents' wealth in a way, like biting flesh off your parents kind of thing. Sounds kind of crazy. Yeah, and then maybe people will start to say something. Yeah.
Well, this is another statistic from the same study because we're going to move the age range up. So this is fewer than half of adults under 30 say that they are completely financially independent is the name of the chart. But on the chart, it has a lot more information. And it says for people 25 to 29 years old, only 44% of U.S. adults consider themselves, quote, completely independent of their parents, financially independent of their parents. So that means that 56% of U.S. adult Americans aged 25 to 29 are not independent of their parents. So they still need some kind of help in terms of financial contributions or living with them or et cetera. That's half. That's roughly half of all Americans. I still find that's quite shocking.
Yeah. Same to me. Same for me, but mostly because I had the impression that most people will be out of their parents' house by, like, you know, age 18 or just somewhere, you know, after they go to college. That's just my general expression. So to know that around 50% of young adults or not so young adults still live with their parents, it's kind of shocking too. But it's shocking, but it doesn't come with a judgment. I'm not thinking it's good or bad. It's just, you know, that's the way it is. And circumstances have changed. You know, external circumstances have changed. Houses are more expensive. And also, I think
everything's more expensive.
Yeah. And also, I heard there's been like a supply shortage when it comes to houses.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Not because there are not enough houses, but that people with more cash, you know, like the baby boomer generation, they have more cash saved up. They have come in and bought those supply, like housing supply, maybe as investments for the future, because housing prices seem to be going up. And that's why the younger generation with less cash, less savings are failing or to get a house, not like failing in life.
You know, I want to remind our listeners of something that we talked about in a previous episode, and it's the tiny home movement. And so a lot of people in America are aware of this. This is something that is becoming a trending. And this, and I'm going to say something that might surprise a lot of people. You can buy a house on Amazon.com now for like 10,000 bucks. So what we really need are Americans who are willing to go to go buy your own lot and just put, you know, these prefab homes, which are tiny, on them. Or if you have like a group of you, you could buy a lot together and share it, or you could put it in your mom and dad's backyard, or, you know, there are other options. But maybe because there is such a problem with getting the old style homes, and that, you know, one of the things I've noticed in the United States, they're not really eager to build what they call condominiums, or these, you know, what we have here in China. A lot of our buildings here are giant apartment complexes that are 30, 40 stories tall. And, you know, we have these wonderful communities that we live in where, because everyone pools their money, we have beautiful gardens and it's well-kept and security guard and all that stuff.
And outdoor gym.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes indoor gyms in some of these places. Yeah. So, or pool, a swimming pool sometimes. So, you know, like, if you, you know, I think America needs to rethink its whole real estate market. And I think we're at the point where maybe that's going to start happening. Maybe apartment complexes like there are in China or in Korea or in Japan, maybe those can start be going up in American cities more, to give more options for housing. Because you don't need a little white picket fence from 1950s to be happy.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point. But I do have a question. So with these tiny homes, like let's say if I buy one and put it in my parents' backyard or in the village somewhere, how does plumbing work?
Well, here's the thing.
Like, do you dig your own hole or something?
You're going to need to hire someone. So you buy the starter home for, some of them are as cheap as $6,000 or $7,000. And some of them range up to $40,000 or $50,000 for these kits. And they come pre-built. You just throw them down. They're done. But inside you have a toilet. Inside you have a sink. Inside, all that's done. And the electrical outlets. But what you do need is to hire a plumber to run a sewage line to the sewer and connect it to your home, which, you know, could cost, it depends on where you live, how much that's going to cost and the quality of the plumber that you hire to do it. But it's not going to be that much. It's not going to be like buying a $500,000 home. So if you get like a kit home that's $10,000 or $20,000 and you put it on a piece of property and you connect it up, you know, you just saved hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But it sounds like the plumbing job might cost you thousands.
For sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess, you know, if our listeners have experiences in this regard, you can tell us in our comments or leave us a message, because I'm pretty curious. And I think similar things might be happening here in China, but not like mini homes. Okay. But like smaller apartments, like these studios, as they call it. Like, they're basically just like one room. With the kitchen, the bathroom, and your bed somewhere, all in this one room. And I think it's actually quite nice. Like, I wouldn't mind living there because everything's so easy to clean. And you literally have everything you need already. And that there will be other young people around. There will be your own community. And it's cheaper than renting a full apartment.
Have you seen this, like, tiny... Just really quick before we... I know this is a little off topic. Have you seen those tiny, 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 tiny little apartments in Hong Kong?
Oh, gosh. I've heard of them.
Where they're like the size of a bathroom, but it's like, that's your bed. This is my kitchen. And they're pointing to an area that's like,
it's crazy,
the size of a piece of paper.
It's crazy. I mean, that's a whole new topic. But the funny thing is, like, I remember years ago, my coworkers, they wanted to go travel to Hong Kong. So they were booking hotels online, right? And literally on the listing, it would say this is like 5.1 square meters or like 10 square meters.
Wow.
And then my coworker thought that they've just simply made a mistake. Like, it was... you know, 50 square meters and or at least, you know, something in the two digits. And after she came back, she was like, oh my gosh, they really meant 5 square meters. And it was the price of like regular hotels here in Beijing back then, right? So yeah, it was quite shocking, but it doesn't have to be that way, you know? But that's a bigger topic. It's not like there's not enough land. It's the way that the economy is organized. Mm. And that's something that I think more countries are trying to change now. Mm-hmm. This incredible inequality in living standards and in income. And I think that's not just like a problem of specific cities or locations or even nations. I think it's global in a way. Mm. This incredible, as you mentioned, you said something about this earlier. And here's something, but the real-time inequality tracker, is that what you, this is probably something you mentioned before, mm-hmm. indicates that the bottom 50% of American adults, now that's bottom 50, mm. half of the American population, adult mm-hmm. population, which is about 125 million people, collectively, they owned about $1.1 trillion U.S. dollars as of January 2023. Mm. And that amount is how much the 8 richest people in the U.S. own together.
Wow.
And to top that off, the 8 richest people that the public knows are not the richest people. You know, these are just the people that the names are known in the public. Mm-hmm. The so-called the richest person, either Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, mm-hmm. or they are not the richest people in the nation. Mm-hmm. The really rich people, you don't even know they exist. Mm-hmm. So, but anyhow, that's, you know, 125 million people, all their wealth combined roughly equals the asset of the 8 richest people in the U.S.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
It's insane.
Right? And also, this is despite the fact that the wealth of the bottom 50% doubled in the past few years. So it's just telling us that the immense wealth of the super rich, you know, the billionaires, it's not trickling down. Mm-hmm. At least not as well as we hope.
Yeah.
It's just circling. There's this thing called investment, right? They simply can't spend that much, right?
Yeah.
And so they invest. They roll their snowballs even greater and greater, you know, great enough to even crush nations, actually. And maybe some countries are at that point and something has to be done about it. But anyhow.
Okay, here's a couple of things here. I agree with you. Firstly, wealth is not trickling down. The Reaganomics voodoo economics thing, supply side economics, is not helpful for the average person. And from that period on, the disparity between the rich and the haves and the have-nots has grown considerably. But here's the thing. I don't mind if there are billionaires. The point at which I mind is when the regular Joe and Jane American, or, you know, in any country, at the point where they can't survive with working a normal amount of work, you know, they can't get by, they can't pay their bills. So I think it's okay to have some degree of inequality, but it's not okay to have such a degree of inequality that people are not able to survive. That's the point at which we have 650,000 homeless people in the United States, is the point at which we need to say, okay, we need to, you know, reevaluate the way that our economy works in a way that's more fair for more people.
Yeah, but what's the solution? Right. That's the big question.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In China, for example, there's a law, a tax law. This is just one example. I'm not going to give the numerous other examples I could give. In China, if you pay rent as opposed to owning a home, you are entitled to a tax subsidy that you can get every single year. And it's not insubstantial. It's a couple thousand US dollars. So if you are a non-homeowner in China, the government literally takes money from the rich in the form of taxes and gives it to you. That's the kind of thing where the government's job should be to redistribute wealth so that it's more fair for the people at the bottom. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I wonder if there can be a study done or a similar study, you know, have been done about, you know, the homeless situation in the U.S., like what has been causing it. The fact that in China, there are just not that many homeless people.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not because China is wealthier than the U.S. It's something else. And it's not just about, what's the word? Like, it's not just about benefits. like social benefits. I think there are other things working here. And also, well, speaking...
Sounds like a book for you to write, baby.
Well, that's, I think that's too hard of a project. but we know that in the US, actually, people living at the bottom of the social economy scale, they actually get more in, what's the word? Welfare. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Welfare money. So they should be doing a little better. Mm. Right? Why aren't they? And some of the similar things we mentioned before is, let's say, family net. Because mm-hmm. here you always have an uncle, like if you don't have parents or you're just not on speaking terms, which is rare, mm-hmm. You have families that you can, you know, at least stay temporarily for a while and then mm-hmm. you can get a job. And there's the countryside where it can hold a lot of people, right? It's actually strategic. Mm-hmm. The countryside exists the way it is, not just because that's just naturally the way it is. It's a national strategy too, right? It can hold a lot of population in cases, let's say the downside of the economic cycle, where there's just not as many jobs being offered in cities, then people can go back to their homes in the countryside. But I don't think the similar thing can happen in the US. A lot of people, once their life in the city is not working well, like they've lost their place to live, they don't know where to go back to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then they're on the street.
Well, I think there's a lot more to cover. We need to come back around to a topic related to economics again, because it's one we always have a lot to say. We are out of time. Oh. Thank you so much for your time, Bebe. Thank you so much for your time, listeners.
Well, thank you, Jason. We would love to hear messages from you. And Jason has the website.
It is. Please email us at welovethebridge@gmail.com. And we'd be happy to read your comments on the air.
All right. Bye, guys. Oh, yeah.